from your captain, our general retires, from your advance, and your fellow representatives of the chair of the Tribal Affairs Committee. In order to reflect the performance of the business, if everyone could keep it down to the manager's headlines for the duration of the meeting. Before we begin, as always, I'd like to thank Amy Peter, the House Tribal Affairs Secretary for Records, and Doug Bridges from the Juneau Ohio for starting with the meeting today. I'd also like to begin by thanking Representative Fields and Representative Grace Hopkins, as well as the House Tribal Affairs Committee. For the meeting of Tribal Affairs today to discuss the important topic of implementation of Rare ID in rural Alaska. Today we will begin by hearing from Alaska Native leaders from across the state on their efforts to comply with Rare ID, as well as a presentation from Daniel Williams-Gans, the Deputy Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles, also the Commissioner of the Department of Administration, Dr. Chewbacca, is online and here for questions today as well. We will begin by turning our attention to public testimony from Dr. Bergstrom, the Health Director for Design Action Conference. Ms. Bergstrom, are you on the line?
According to the last Thank you. Thank you.
pre-submit information online. So that once you go into again an OID in that state, all you have to do is provide the documents, and then they have to put a check with the documents online that makes you aware of what you need to do, what you need to bring in order to make sure that you can access an OID. Personally, I went down a few months ago. I thought I was an expert on this. Before our AMB was shut down and before we had a contractor in place, I thought I had everything I needed. I didn't realize I needed two things with my physical address on it. Luckily, I had my truck on site and my vehicle registration. But if I were from a village, I would have meant that I had phone in and looked at everything that I needed. So one thing I think the state could be doing a little bit better is outreach, having a really good number for questions, the website, the state of Alaska could be improved. I think they get the weather function's job to appropriate funding to ensure that every village in the state of Alaska has somebody going to their community at least once and providing that as an opportunity versus a community of 800 people. Thank you. question. You mentioned that does NAM currently have a DMV?
NAM does not currently have a DMV. We do have a contractor, a private contractor providing services. We do not pay your CDL currently. I think that's something that we're working on, but DMVs do contract out to a private business at a sale on Monday through Friday, 1 to 5. And that means that you also could have a wait of up to 300 minutes, which I didn't have that for us today, but 5 hours. In Boulder, you sign up and then it tells you your estimated wait time. We sent an employee there last week and she reported back that when she showed up, it was an estimated wait time of 300 minutes.
Thank you for that. There are other, and I'm interested in hearing about other federal ID, in addition to the title ID and UI IDs, we've been hearing a lot of alternative options that Homeland Security is considering that is acceptable, including passports. Can you talk about opportunities that may or may not exist in your region with regard to access for applying for a passport?
I think it's possible with this. There's not something I've researched heavily. The way that I think that it works is that you make an appointment with the post office to get a photo taken, and then they submit your documents that are mail. You have to mail in the original documentation, and the cost is over $300. The last time I checked, because you're working on time, you're looking at some of the religion, zero access to passport photography. So no passport, as far as I know, is being issued in any of our villages. It's the same thing. You have to have a photo that's acceptable. So it's not really an option. If you want to travel internationally and use passport, you have to go and do that in order to get that photo. And then you have to send in all of the original documentation to Seattle.
Thank you. Any additional questions? I'm signing up.
Madam Chair, thank you, Lily, for that overview from Gloria's experience with Real ID. So, Madam Chair, just listening to this conversation we've been having, it occurs to me that if a state was partnering with DREX and recognizing DREX generally, we would not have had such a significant opportunity cost be lost. I can work for public safety in rural Alaska, in King Salmon, where it's also a contracted DMV, shared with troopers, shared with borough police, shared with public works. And the hours from that DMV also very short. I strongly identify with the remarks that Ms. Mankey just shared with us. And it's also true that in rural Alaska, addresses are very hard to fix. The villages are not platted like many municipal streets are. But it's also true that the local tribal councils do over everybody lives and also are able to verify residency, how long, who was born there, who was not, who came into the village, under what circumstances, and whether they're still there, which family they're married into. And it occurs to me that real IDs, if we were partnering with tribes, they would be able to provide authenticity of residency through a council process, a tribal council process, in partnership with the state. That would save both entities an enormous amount of money. And if we were working cooperatively, the state and tribes on this from the get-go, I think this wouldn't be a problem. I'm glad we're heading in that direction now. But I think as much as we can defer to establishing authenticity and residency and birth to the tribes, the quicker we can resolve the ID. So just a thanks for your comment. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And here are questions for Ms. Henke. Thank you, Ms. Henke, for your testimony this morning. Next, we will hear from Richard Peterson, President of the Central Council of Canada. Mr. Peterson, if you could begin by putting yourself on record and begin your testimony.
Yeah. saying certain people change their last name for a man on our ministry related to the birth certificate, not being the same name as stated she had the names and passwords, and anyone who gets a divorce is verbally caught up in this. Namely, paperwork going to be an added challenge in community with only a narrative. People who are struggling to keep housing are in a situation where they cannot provide proof of stable address, and have as long as we're sellers, so that no mail or bill is just like a home address. Many owners do not have the required documentation to apply birth certificates, social security cards, and marriage licenses due to various reasons, such as moved homes, lost paperwork, natural disasters, etc. And many owners and low-income individuals lack the financial resources to pay for the required documentation that is needed. Travel from rural hubs to $500. Now, looking at how to determine some of our easiest kind of citizens through programs like PANS. Some of those folks can't even afford the postage to send in numerous other required issues. So you can imagine the barriers and the cost of trying to travel to an outcome of the community. As you heard from a previous testimony, $300 to $500 is quite common in Southeast. Especially now with the credit service. You might like that, but it's become a real burden for our communities. And we had folks who have been medevaced and, medical emergency, oftentimes nobody's thinking about the patient's identification. And so we've had to use people being medevaced from sickbay, which is our regional service provider organization. And so it created a real hardship and cost there. We've considered some possible solutions for consideration. It's good to see the DMV and Anchorage Airport. We think Fairbanks, Juneau, and other regional communities would benefit from that. And maybe, we could possibly have DMV. I think that could give a benefit, serve all of the communities in Alaska that really need to further service. This program, staying coordinated with the census people, they're in the communities that could coordinate messaging equipment or work with a contractor to hire new census people for additional revenue on behalf of the DMV. The state could assign someone at the Department of Administration and the DMV to certify that the people are residents when or if they don't have proper documentation of the street address or birth certificate. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. In fact, we talked to our congressional delegation about it as well because I honestly think it needs to become a priority component of PSA agent training because the majority of them know that they do their hires and they're not up to speed. I think it often happens on off hours, like really early in the morning or late, because that's when the better PSA agents are on.
Just to highlight more of the previous discussions that we've had in this committee, we have on the Trauma Talk really recognized. And it seems unfortunate that it is perpetuated in something as simple as just trying to go through the airport and using your revenue ID or even such an effort. But perhaps that is something that we could also try to communicate with. TSA making an extra effort to recognize the IDs that they have already been approved by the federal government and trying to ease the burden on obtaining the real ID. So, thank you for your work in that.
Thank you. Madam Chair, if I may. As I said, we've taken great steps, and I can't speak for other tribes here in the region. I know I think my group tribe is one that did not agree on the overall advanced ideas as well, but it costs over $100,000. And it's really unfortunate when we're turned away because our IDs for quite a while have exceeded that of the state IDs and
the day. Not only Fred came home, right, as the student was being loaded, was doing that regularly. What would you say is the percentage of your members who have type IDs? Is there any of them that may or may not work? And then what is the process for getting one?
Clarification, the next time, when you ask for percentages of our tribal citizens that have the visa, I would say it's probably about 30-40% now. We are putting forward very efforts to get our enrollment staff out in our communities, and we can have them there for 8 hours and have lines out the door in our communities to find out what it looks like. We don't charge our citizens for the board, so it's just a benefit there.
What is the process for getting one? How does it pregnant do with them, and what identification do they need in order to get one?
They have to be able to provide proof of a tribal enrollment, or then they're going to be by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, it's a little bit lengthy process as well, but not in the most cumbersome of this process. And yes, we can't do anything. That was a lot of expenses. The pictures to print these are very expensive. I have to provide the hardware. You know, we provide a picture on site, they take your picture, they have the backdrop, and then kind of decide if you're going to get your passport. But then, so they have to have a current picture of YouTube. And the main thing that we do also is, you know, that they're compliant and they provide an expiration date, which is not that well, but you're finished when we expired. And it's really simply so that we can be compliant. It's not saying that your citizenship expires and you have a flight to come to the world and say, we are a citizen for the next 5 years. Absolutely. The state, the problem with these issues is they come up with like cookie cutter processes. Well, we're here today because there's cookie cutter processes don't work for everybody. I have people in my community that don't know the community. And that would be fine, and they would need their real ID if they try to make or leave, but unfortunately, medical emergencies and other things happen. And they find themselves out in the big bad world and stuck. So I absolutely believe it's the state's responsibility. I think someone said before me that I think it might be banky. You know, it's the legislature's obligation to provide funding to make sure that everybody has access or everybody is able to obtain this new ID that the federal requires.
Can you speak to, I think you referenced it, but the cost to the tribe to put forward real ID was more, that you feel can help is more of a compliant identification for your tribal citizens. What is the total cost for that kind of software and infrastructure? And also, what is the staff cost that's being put forward to provide that endeavor?
Madam Chair, I can't give you exact cost. I can kind of give you a ballpark. I know that the equipment, the trainer, DistroKid's ID is over $10,000. Software, I think, over $100,000 in hardware. Then we send staff to training. So, you know, they're big. We send them for 4 or 5 years, and we're still operating on those logistics. I would ballpark it around $150,000.
Resources where
they are, maybe a little bit different. Yeah, so some tribes have been eligible one time funding of the Denver Regional Tribe. We have literally 32,000 citizens. Excuse me, people think we get money for every citizen. That's not true. We get money for citizens that we provide services to. And so we call that a service area. So if you live outside of our service area, we don't get money to serve you. So our own ventures and our own work through our trust fund that we've been building for, you know, quite some time, we have a private venture. We choose to use those funds to provide services to our citizens that otherwise would be unserved. We're enacted by an act of Congress. We're the only tribe in Alaska that agrees that most tribes are far to the Denormalization Act. And so, in a lot of their constitutions, allow for membership of any Alaska Indian with name or American. So, if you were Choctaw and you moved to Bethel, if Bethel was the constitutional honor, they could enroll there. Click on that, and you have to be descendant of Indian. We don't base on blood quantity, but we do base on how many years of energy. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. I was curious because, like in my region, the Native Village of Quinhok has 600, maybe 700 tribal citizens in its rules, and the resources that they have are largely vastly different than what might be available on a regional tribe with tens of thousands. The legislature has heard that the Department of Motor Vehicles is awaiting requests from tribes in order to go out to communities and provide related compliant efforts and outreach. Has it been communicated to your tribe that communities and tribal leaders need to specifically request related services?
This program, they really have not outreached to the Denmark. I can't say that they haven't to the mixed tribes. But I have talked to people who have said that they have also been made. But there is also at the tribe's expense, which I find a little bit appalling.
Thank you. Any additional questions for President Peterson? Thank you for your testimony and your time. Sorry. Thank you, President Peterson, for being here today. And I was also a comment, and I appreciate the other testimonies of people today. I've heard some presentation in another committee on this, but having hands on the ground experience and painting the picture is another painful thing, really, to hear because as our efforts, and I'd like to think that we are closer. I'm realizing that we are and working together with all of our citizens. And so I apologize for how difficult all of this is. And I was really encouraged to hear the solutions offered up by the people today. And I'm hoping we can work with our administration and everyone here today and get things better.
I appreciate the comments and the questions that we get. I think as we add more abilities through your efforts and in the community to be up here, I think we're normalizing the conversation of tribes. And I want to appreciate the success of our president and recognize some of the hurdles. But I think we're really examining the healthy tribes and keep healthy communities. And I think that's something we all want to have a master in for healthy communities. So I appreciate the talent.
I did remember one question. We hear a lot about TSA accepting red IDs and tribal IDs, and that's really where a lot of the conversation has settled. But from what I understand from the Red ID Act, this will also apply to military bases and federal facilities. Have you heard at all from tribal members who've tried to use?
I haven't heard that they will no longer be. I know that we do have a lot of A large government contract in the military base in Colorado. I use my travel ID to go there and zero problem.
Thank you. I'm going to turn my attention to an update by General Rafkin, the Deputy Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. If you could please stand up for yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Thank you.
person who obtains the options and why is this significant? We have a fairly different definition for that question, and I think she would have a better response than we would. Thank you. Commissioner Tarago, do you have a question? And if so, could you put yourself on the record and reply?
Sure that is being trained to recognize our bodies. We have been working with TSA
issues to the airport. However, we have been reassured by the DSA officials that we've been speaking to that fairly open to travel IDs as long as they have data are absolutely accepted at DSA checkpoints across the nation. There's also, we were given an internal SMB that has the fairly open to travel on there. It's also posted on our public website. So when we brought up the issue, it's more recording issue at the local TSA level than it is a policy at TSA itself. And so they have committed to increasing the training, especially now.
A follow-up question related to that. We have looked at the DMV website, and there is a notification that travel IDs are an alternative option to a real ID driver assistance or identification card. It always has the phrasing if applicable or something to that effect that the driver IDs must meet a certain type of standard. Has the department sent specific eligibility criteria of what standards must be met by driver IDs to tribes across the left landing back in?
The only realm that TSA has given is that the tribe is not really recognized and that it has a photo. There are no other parameters that are aware of the TSA requires, and there is nobody to help us anything else either.
Sure, so I guess my question is it can be a little bit confusing accessing the Department of Motor Vehicles information when it sort of indicates that there's additional criteria for those communities to meet. Has that clarification that need to be on the driver ID card then communicated to us, the driver or the department?
Well, actually, when we have conversations with the tribes, we see the same information that I just shared to you, but we try to be careful not to speak on behalf of the TSA because we're not DSA. So for us to distribute any sort of official correspondence across Alaska on behalf of TSA, we would be appropriate. So we can share our knowledge in the conversations that we're having.
So I guess that's a little bit concerning that the department doesn't take on the communication responsibility to help share what the standards are. If it's being shared with a group of legislators, it seems like it can be shared as a letter to the department leader or whatever, so people know what opportunities there are to meet their standards, specifically if the department is relying on travel IDs as an alternative option, but something to consider moving forward.
I'm curious to clarify, I may have misspoke, but we do have the internal SMB that I referred to on our website. We also have the link to TSA's website on our website. If anybody asks us specific questions, we give them that information. So we do give that information out. We have conversations about it.
Sure, I think maybe a good time for me to phrase this is it seems like it would be more appropriate as we look at an October 1st, 2020 deadline to be proactive instead of reactive, and Alaskans may not be stranded in an airport or trying to get into a federal facility after the fact. And so it just seems like maybe it would be worthwhile for the department to be proactive and trying to get information that you know without requiring the burden or the barrier for tribes to have to go through that experience and request that information. But it's really good sense. Sure, Commissioner Swatka.
Issued almost 100,000 IIDs. After February 15th, we have issued over 15,000 IIDs total.
register as a hep C, then our RUD used the same by month, which was done by the blue bars, and then the RUD is gray, which is shown by the orange line on the secondary axis. That is really a protein grade, 20% of people go back on there with a RUD credential, and then we can get more identification for information. So the first question of the year, we saw about 33%, and then we saw that increase to 50% for the end of the year, and so far in 2020, it's been a 50% gap. So benchmarking these numbers, keep in mind it's important that we recognize that the demand for RUIDs is not expected to be lost to the adult population because of the alternative system passports and military IDs and travel IDs alone. So thanks for answering the question. Yes, thank you. So I'm going to give you this information broken down by region and place, because we've just heard of the difficulty in our rural areas of getting this. So I think it would really help, be helpful to you in the department in looking to find the solutions that were suggested today that you might want to implement for the certain regions, because I would suspect that it would be interesting for me to see what regions the IDs. For the chart, we do have that data. I actually touched on that in the other slide today. So, yeah, some of the fields.
It's true around the issue of demand. How many tribes have the ability to issue federally compliant tribal IDs right now?
For the chart, is in the fields. I think they're all allowed to, whether or not they all have the infrastructure in place.
Tribes that don't have infrastructure, and I think we heard from interviewers about there's different places and there's others. It might make sense to focus in our region, those communities that, for whatever reason, don't have the infrastructure issue, such as modern-day self-making villages, for example, where they're quite a lot of pride and advocacy that we have over 50 grand working on.
Thank you. As we're having these conversations with a different outreach here, we're actually going to bring up the outreach for the presentation. But we have local process where we need to get contact with the tribes and find out what their processes are, because it does vary to our large tribe.
Okay. In closing, I'm just going to say that you have the departments, this is going to have to figure out which tribes actually can and the real world which can to sort of outreach accordingly. Because in some cases, the department, they have to travel to rural communities, particularly those in which tribe is not able to share travel to make this complaint.
And I'd like to see if we have any of the testifiers from GCC or Burnett still in the line and if they're available to respond to our planning field question. Spread the word about the upcoming enforcement date. In 2018, we formed a partnership with the Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Citywide Aviation Airports. And our aim there was to post language and conduct press releases, increase our social media presence, and we even launched a DMV presence in the Anchorage and Fairbanks airports during the busy holiday season of Thanksgiving and Christmas. And we continue to have a presence in the Anchorage airports in the form of two process extensions, which you can see here on the slide. And we have some problems coming in from rural communities and an opportunity for telling about the new requirements and then also providing them with really specific.
So it does appear that movement is on the line. Virginia, you have to be able to repeat your question. I think you did get to reply to it.
Ms. Banky, I guess it's how many tribes in your region have the infrastructure issue federally compliant with their IDs?
We have 27 websites tribes in our region, and 19 of them have been submitted to court, and by people next year,
state issued real ID available in your region, just as it's available in ACO, does that what you're saying?
Yes, we really appreciate that opportunity. We don't want to be driving somewhere and just thinking that. Alaska from north all the way along the west coast. This is really specific
different sectors of the population, but not specific to region Philadelphia, I think that would be what's most important. Okay, I have to bring that up here. Is there anything else?
I just want to follow up and express concern that 6,700 is a gross spear kind of liberty out there with the marginally queer communities that are not even remotely accessible to a DMV. They have a few hundred of residents each. But I guess I'm also not following up on Mickey's comment. What I'm hearing is that not a lot of based on people's experience, made AMP, may have to substitute for real ID and whatever.
Services and like 9 to 5, and they have to barely get one of the solutions was to work with Medicaid to get a waiver for travel restrictions that they have to get there the next morning. And I don't know if that is something the department was aware of. And at a different time, but has there been outreach to the Medicaid program on the issue? That was the first time that I heard about the travel restrictions as well, and I think it's a good solution to partner with our agency to get better access to DMV facilities to obtain ID. So I'll start getting a follow-up on that.
Just to follow up on that, perhaps we could propose legislation from this committee if necessary for the Department of Health and Social Services to offer a temporary expansion of the travel time. Based upon earlier testimony, they were required to take the earlier day flight back on that same day visit. Perhaps the department could issue temporary extension until they take a later flight so that there could be time in those communities to be able to go to the DMV and get what is needed, and that is something that we can look for from this committee.
I do have a question, Ms. Matkins. In kind of follow-up, we did hear concerns from Ms. Hickey today about the limited hours that the contractor is available and how to provide DMV assistance for that region. I know that in Bethel, the DMV has been sporadically open and closed, and I think they were open for a little while before Christmas, and I'm not sure if they had been open during the month of January and February, but Bethel DMV, as we told you last week, was set to be closed until March 3rd. Can you talk about, if we're talking about Alaskans without access to DMV, I would think that this is news that the communities of Nome and Bethel and Cotsview have reliable DMV access when, in fact, those DMV offices have been closed sporadically. So, can you speak to what the Department of Motor Vehicles plans to either provide additional resources and coverage to send staff to those areas, or can you speak a little bit more to that?
Sure, Madam Chair. Some in Bethel, we did have unexpected closures in January. We have one employee in the office, and she had an unexpected family emergency that required her to be away from the office, and there was scheduled leave during February, so this is not a good situation for that. But this summer, we intend to hire another short-term non-permanent position for the Bethel office to help with the summer traffic. Typically, the DMV traffic is seasonal. So we see the gap in the summer, and of course, this is going to be a strong summer for us. So, Bethel will have another employee seen Angela? And the reason that he's open after is just the demand right now. It's the winter time and it's slow. We thought that as well when we used to have an employee in that region. However, I do know that he's actively recruiting for another employee from the summer rush, as it's very new as dark as ever. And he's also been in communications with Eric to direct us to sort of a summer roadshow to some of the villages in that area as well. So he's very active. He definitely plans to ramp up his availability in the summer as well. Yes, to the moment, it sounded that there was a bit of concern and apprehension for Rachel to ask about this date, but we're not out of many of these communities, and it seems like a real opportunity lost to wait until the summer to provide an additional long-term position within each of those communities that are not necessarily open now, that there could be more of a proactive outreach into the respective sub-regions to talk about just provide resources and make themselves more available to answer questions and to be able to keep regular open office hours. Is the department opposed to providing that resource now as opposed to waiting until the summer when we're much closer to that November 1st deadline?
Not sure we're not opposed at all because we haven't seen the volume yet to warrant an additional position.
Because training is just so critical to expect someone to start the job and be ready to go. And also, there were many excellent suggestions given such as how can our website be better, easier to follow, and certainly someone in outreach in these other departments can be working on that while they're getting training. So, if I may speak to the website and the carrying out the documents issue, I was thinking about previous committees of hearing this and also listening to the earlier discussions about both physical residency and the challenge for rural communities that don't have a physical address that is recognized. What are the options for those communities to provide that documentation? Because I believe it's two pieces of documentation. Are there other options available to communities to provide that? First, I represent our Vance Bissler. We have a system in place where verified leaders in the community can attest in writing to the description and location of a resident's home. So, for instance, we could say the grand house 3 or 3 houses to the left of the hospital that we work for Department of Homeland Security documentation purposes. And we feel that is a great way to kind of combat that challenge because there is a lack of street names and sometimes house drivers as well in rural Alaska.
Along that same vein, listening to the testimony that there's other concerns for proving some of the elders that the members are delivered to order their addresses and things like that. The people in the community know them and they can attest to them. I was thinking about like the birth certificate, for instance. This may be outside of your net, but I was wondering about the proof that tribal members have to provide that they're here over 8 years to that being in place of a birth certificate. And that means similar option and maybe it's a question helping with compliance of being able to provide that identification of families and if they're not in communities. Besides the physical address, could some of these later community leaders provide other testimony as to the identification of whether it's a family or something like that, because that's too overfilled, right? So
project, they will continue to get members.
And the chair representative here, the Department of Homeland Security left the personal liability verification up to the states. So we were able to look at our unique state and determine creative solutions to the problems that we ran into very unique deal. The rest of your requirements in terms of identity, local status, social security numbers, we did not have flexibility in those numbers, or those requirements, those can be directly from the federal government. So I absolutely agree that getting the right data is challenging, and to gather up all these documents can be implemented, especially for immigrant workers in these communities. In those cases, that's part of the reason that we are trying to do outreach and do some of the federal travel program, because that is not always a more viable option for that, is to get the travel ID instead of the ID, because it does require original certified documents to prove all of these different facets.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to compliment the Department of Administration for the residency description improvements on the for that they're not funded. I noticed that it was vastly more inclusive options around the last county, how to identify where you live, and that was a brand new thing, so thank you for that. Thank you. I'd like to get into a few changes. But on that same note, you were talking about the governor or somebody in the community who's able to verify where somebody lives, where their street is down. Because of the vast number of communities that don't have access to either the RRDs or DMKs, is there a way for that identification by the village or chief in the village to be able to send a staff letter or something verifying that address with the individual when they go to a location to get to verify their physical address in the same manner?
Through the chair of the pockets, yes, we will accept those letters and DMKs as well if you're not just for travel trips.
If you're going to be sending out the notice of drives and travel years, letting them know that they can make sure that that information is included in what they can send out in address verification.
Okay. Alaska members have managed to create a newsletter for all of their members. And so these are things that we spell out in the newsletter. So that should go pretty much what you're saying as well.
I do want to go back to the statement about not seeing the demand in rural DMV areas. I think we heard overwhelming testimony from individuals that live and work in rural Alaska that cost to get to travel from a region or from a village in their particular sub-region into my own community. And so there are likely cost barriers to many Alaskans that may otherwise present themselves to identity to ever ask questions about getting a real ID or to apply for one. And so, I guess just to go back to my previous statement about ramping up additional staff time support, summer seasons are often subsistence seasons, and so it might be difficult to reach pockets of Alaska that are otherwise engaged in traditional gathering activities in order to help contain costs on their family throughout the winter season. I am curious, back to the question that I had in earlier testimony, and this is a question for the commissioner. There was a statement that was made in the planning committee about there has not been a request from the community to provide DMV access in particular villages, and my office is starting to see official formal letters coming into to the state to request those services. Is it the department's expectation and requirement that tribes and villages should be submitting letters of request to bring DMV services to villages, and if so, has that been communicated?
Through the chair, that's the first step in the process for these types of travel trips that we're piloting right now. So the communities will reach out directly to the DMV. We start the conversation, and maybe it's a good time to actually skip over to the outside because at the moment, we're over here.
still walking through this process. After this outreach coordinator made first rates contact with the community, she will be creating an educational approach to help teach the community about all of their options for federally compliant IDs. And after learning about the variety of ID options, some communities have determined that these aren't as much of a need because we have tribal IDs and they're prevalent. But others have been just going back and serving their communities. And that's a piece that's really important if you look back at the statute, because the communities, in terms of state and municipal governance, their request for the change to the agreement has to come from the applicants themselves, and that's in accordance with the statute. So the next step is for, like you said, the community to go out and survey. And then we started a center sheet. And as part of that process, we have a document checker that the community will train within the communities, run through and make sure that the residents have all the documents that they need in order for the DMV to have a successful rural travel trip. So did that answer your question? Not really. So the departments believe that because there is not a DMV in the community, according to statute, there has to be a formal request in order to provide what is otherwise basic state-funded services in other parts of Alaska. I think it would be wise to actually defer to the commissioner to expand upon what he said there.
Thank you for the question. I think what we're trying to do is comply with the statutes set by the legislature that we have the ordinances and ensure individuals with requested or DID and understand that either their community or the state is requiring them to get a new ID. This is a process that we put in place to making sure that individuals understand what their options are and if they're actually requesting a new ID from the DID.
So I think that's,
based on the testimony we heard earlier, I might suggest a slightly different approach where access to basic state documents is the default, and perhaps there's a need to get different food services. I would understand if the department would be difficult not providing them, but you know, when we have elections, there are polling places in rural Alaska, and it costs more to provide polling places in rural Alaska on a per person basis than in Anchorage. But we provide that service because it's because people are citizens who are taking it. So I think the workflow makes sense from the perspective of working with rural communities, but it doesn't make sense to me that you would really to receive a specific request from them. This is a very basic. State service, and I think we really expect the people from every rural community willing to have time to travel. And we give them a lot of access to travel ID support. These travel IDs, for unfortunate practical reasons, don't exist. Thank you.
And just to add to our point of view, just because the DMV is going out to a rural community doesn't compel someone to apply for one if they don't want one. So I think there's a difference in expectation of what equitable access could and should provide from the Department of Motor Vehicles. And so I would think to the theory about the default position, I would hope for the state is that rural Alaska donors think we're part of the movement and understand that we're looking at a real firm and that has real implications within movement of Alaskans, that we consider revising this additional expectation that there would be a threshold cut when it doesn't measure with regard to requesting specific support before a trip is scheduled, because as representatives notes, limited somebody is not compelled to apply for real ID during the DMV outreach.
Representative Kim. Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I'm seeing that as our understanding evolves both with the legislature and the state government as to what real ID means and what zone we need it. I go back to 2018 on the House floor and we had a vigorous debate about this, and I feel somewhat compelled to say one of the reasons why Department of Administration is in this kind of no man's land is because the legislature at the time we debated this wanted to make sure people knew it was an option, that it
person to sort of do what they have to get through OOP, but if you want access to federal facilities, like power plants and other bases, you know, we have a significant labor force that's going to be impacted by this if we can't provide this. In addition to trouble. But then there's this discussion, so we made it optional to put a lock, and I said it was optional, and you need to require, you need to ask for the federal complaint ID. And some of the reasons is we didn't want people who felt the privacy concerns or whatever concerns to feel like it was their only option. But now, with more information and as this has evolved, we've realized just how many people need to travel for medical reasons, other reasons, and it's become much more of an issue than we realized. And perhaps if our foresight had been perfect, we would have said, on the balance of things, the state really needs to make this the only option that the state makes sure that they cover. But at the time, we weren't there yet. And so it was more an option. And so now, I can see the administration, Department of Administration is trying to get this out there now as we realize it is more and more mandatory, especially in certain areas of the state. But I just wanted to put that as kind of a backdrop because I don't remember why we structured the statute the way it is, and now I kind of wish we made it a little better. So thank you, Madam Chair.
For that proposition, but I appreciate that you're probably one of the few that just happened to be somebody today. Maybe I've been part of the problem. Yes, thank you. It appears that kind of the main things are really the factual, but one of the larger concerns is if the Alaska residents have to travel, outside for emergency purposes and can't get back as maybe they don't have the ID that's necessary. So, would we be able to offer up, a temporary, turnaround on the ID that could be issued, that could help in an emergency situation? Because it sounds like, again, this is a question from the commissioner, that the department is limited in statute, and some of the stuff we've been being able to publish is taking time, but we don't want people to fall through the cracks in the process. What it would look like, would it be helpful to the department for us to have a bill that could amend statute to give the department more flexibility in being able to assist in emergency situations concerning the real ID?
Thank you.
regimes on our end. Our payer does have the option to deactivate its expedited card. However, it does cost for that service. So we have the option to have a legislation that allows us to offer that service and then we do the financials as well.
Thank you, Ms. Vincent. Thank you, Commissioner, for your response. I think that segues really well into the Senate 16, just recognizing that we're short on time. If you could go over this slide, that would be helpful.
So, that is actually great because this is our summary slide. And with the launching of the campaign staff, launching it from the federal mandate that was imposed on Alaska. And the campaign is responsible for providing real IDs to Alaskans who want the ID because they either don't have a gender form of ID or they don't have an additional form of identification. You have to remember that Alaska statutes are very clear that real ID is an option and you can't have it represented as a requirement. So the DMV's plan is to continue to take on additional duties to serve Alaskans as part of the implementation effort, such as the education and outreach efforts that we've been doing, and also coordinating with rural communities, with engaging media and social media platforms, and programming with key stakeholders and advocacy groups to inform Alaskans of their options and encourage them to get up and early vote and ID before October 1st. These efforts, I think, will be lost at the slide. We have costed the DMV about 86,000 so far since from the end of 2018. And we forecast these efforts to continue on this path of traveling to these different communities and doing education and outreach. It costs about 160,000. This is primarily in the personnel cost of traveling representatives to these different areas and their indigenous and even more time in education and outreach throughout the rest of this year as well.
Does the personnel cost cover for the non-permanent positions that you spoke about this morning?
Medicare, I mentioned some of that would be an additional cost as well.
Can you speak to how you're planning so we didn't see the density of need by region as we talked about earlier? Can you talk about how you plan to prioritize outreach for Alaska if there's only $1,000 that you need to spend for travel for the remainder of the 2020?
Sure. So we have mirrored the policy that we do already. We have done for quite some time. There are some communities right now who don't offer certain services, such as road testing. And if there is a community that has a need for that, they contact the DMV, they say, you know, if you people that we need, you can offer these services for, will you please do it, or we'll be happy to cover the travel. So that's the arrangement that we've been doing for a number of years for communities that don't have DMV services. We're near that same policy for the rural reality outreach as well. The communities are responsible for the travel, the airfare, lodging, meals, and travel incidentals. However, Reagan has Blue Airlines has offered to cover the travel to most of the communities, which is a significant cost to the communities. So that's really wonderful for these areas as well. And then the DMV is responsible for providing the technology and the personnel resources to cover these trips.
Does that make sense?
Thank you for reference. Can you repeat the question? Those types of communities have been that reached out to us to travel. So in the case where we did want to go to, I think,
I don't think you can justify mention it because I think we're going to do a lot of crowd testing that we can have some paper about. I just want to note, 2019, we saved $45.7 million in state general fund transportation in terms of travel costs for healthcare. I realize it's a different department, it's in the Department of Health and Social Services, but I just want to make the point that we will be able to travel to take place again at 100% economic rate, where they're saving in tens of millions of dollars per year. The savings per year increase from $10.5 million in 2017 to $28.8 million in 2018 to $45.7 million in 2019. So, yes, it's going to cost a little bit of money. But if you're really lucky, you spend that money, you know, the savings in terms of what you're paying at 100% economic rate, the return on investment should be clear. And I've been moving beyond our obligations to citizens of the state.
Ms. Hankins, can you provide me with background on this, the DMV as net revenue positive or net revenue negative every fiscal year? If so, how much does the DMV return to the DMV every year? $1,000 for rural outreach for the rest of FY20. Here today, how important this issue is for a lot of people who live on the safety reasons. So I look forward to continuing to work with the department and would be happy to follow up if we heard some great testimony about the opportunity to pre-file documents online before all of our community youth that were in the DMP at probably the same time and cost and travel expenses. So I do want to thank Commissioner Chewbacca for your time and being available for questions this morning, as well as Dr. Rodkin for your time this morning. I look forward to following up with you. I hope that we can check back in the next week or so to see how the plans have progressed based on the testimony and the ideas that were received today. The next meeting for the House Travel and Affairs Committee will be Tuesday, February 25th at 9. In grade 106, we will be hearing testimony on the Bob Bennington Southwest Regulation Act with me, Brian Dixon. The time is 7 a.m. in this hearing at the House Travel Affairs Committee, and a joint hearing with State Affairs Assembly during